Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
Yes, Dateline dropped their bombshell reporting just the other night with brand new information on the Brian Koberger case. More information that, incidentally, does not point to him not being the killer. Of course, he's innocent till proven guilty, but there's more that does not look all that good. Joining me to discuss, Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent. Jen, I know you watched it as well, and it was fascinating. There was a lot of stuff in there that we had seen before, but they certainly got some new pieces and pieces I think a lot of us have been wondering about for quite some time. What were some of the things that stood out to you in that Dateline report?
Well, I think from a truly sort of graphic and horrific and grab you from, you know, the point of view that this isn't a movie. This isn't Scream. This isn't Friday the 13th. This is real. When they discussed Ethan Chapin's legs being carved into, that for me, I know that seems like a small detail, but it was actually a huge detail for me because of the loathing and the hate and the just everything that came out with that action.
Yeah.
And knowing that the Chapins have known about that all this time, how difficult it must be for the family. So that jumped out at me, Tony, and many other things, but that one was the real one that got me.
I mean, and it plays, if we're understanding Brian Koberger to be the person that I think a lot of us suspect he is, having the issues with women, the jealousy of others that are getting these women and he's not. If that's his thing with this, carving into Ethan's leg, I mean, I hate getting gross because it's just, ugh. But I mean, it's a piece of the case. I mean, what does that tell you about his mindset? The fact that he went to that degree in, whoever did this went to that degree in the process of murdering these people. It's unneeded. It's unnecessary. It's not one of the things you need to do to just kill the person. That's passion. That's some sort of hate or something.
Yeah, no, exactly right. And really, we found out also that it would seem he was sound asleep, you know, drinking all night. It was 2 a.m. They'd been at this big fraternity party. And he slit his artery, right?
Yeah.
Carotid, I would believe. So there was no need. This wasn't about incapacitating him so he couldn't run or anything like that. And I'm not even sure he needed to kill him, Tony.
No.
You know, at that point, Xana's dead and he could have left. But no, he not only felt the need to kill him, he felt the need to mutilate him. And I think that just shows the mindset of the torment, the hate of looking at somebody like Ethan and saying, you are everything I could never be.
Yeah. I mean, I want to shiver when I think about that because it's so creepy and it's so, so dark. There was a lot in this, and there were some big pieces. I want to talk about another piece that stood out to me that I don't think got a ton of attention, at least as the Twitter sphere with everybody talking about this. The phone call to the parents the next morning, Brian calling mom and dad. Oh, to be a fly on the wall to hear that phone call. I mean, I'm not thinking he's like, hey, mom, dad, guess what? I just slaughtered four college kids. But I really wonder what the hell that conversation was about, because it lasted a good deal of time. I what are they talking about there? Like, hey, you having pancakes this morning? Oh, yeah. I got some Mrs. Butterworth on here today. I mean, what do you think that conversation was?
Well, and conversations that I believe there were two, if I recall correctly, one lasting 30 minutes, one lasting 50 minutes.
Yeah.
So as you said, these are extended conversations, and really right after the murders, when I think about this case, Tony, I think of someone that had such built up rage and anger and hate for so many. We actually got to see and read Koberger talk about his rage toward his father, how poorly he treated him and what a terrible person he was. And to me, this event would have been so cathartic for him, where he said, I'm cleansed. I'm cleansed now. I'm whole. I'm worthwhile. Look at what I've done. Look at how I conquered this. And I think that he called his parents probably in a great mood, just like we see in that selfie, and probably maybe even apologizing for recent past actions of not being very nice. And just, I would love to see when was the last time he even called his parents. When the last time was he had a long conversation? Dollars to donuts, he didn't call him often.
I'm going to guess that too. And especially at that hour of the morning. It's a weird time to be calling mom and dad, unless mom and dad get up that early and you do too, and this is a normal call time. Maybe it is, but I would love to see if that's a pattern or if that's a really big one-off, and I want to know what happened. I mean, the parents, they could be called as witnesses here. So we may end up hearing about what that conversation was like once this trial takes place. Could we not?
Well, they need to be called as witnesses. There's so much, I think, that they could testify about. I mean, we have everything from the K-bar knife. Mm-hmm. They need to be asked, did you order that? Was it your, did you ever use Koberger's computer? Because I think forensically they're going to show, we've seen it in the court documents, that it's his keystrokes on his computer. Mm-hmm. But they're going to have to completely exclude that anybody else in that family used his computer to take that K-bar knife. And they're going to want somebody in or everyone in the family really to say, it wasn't me. I didn't do it. And if they know Brian ordered it, we need that testimony. We have the ride back. How did that happen? Yeah. I think it's very interesting that when he went to college, at least my understanding is, he went by himself. So why did he want Pops to come drive back with him? And what all was discussed? Was anything hidden on that drive? Remember, they took that circuitous route.
Yeah, that's true. It was a bizarre route. It was not necessary. They went like an extra. I used to know the number, but it's several hours out of the way to get to where they're going in Pennsylvania, which didn't make a whole lot of sense. But yeah, I wonder if, and I don't think the dad was aware if he did get rid of something along the way, but I could totally see it where Koberger was waiting to dispose of something along that route versus the route that went kind of around and out of town a little bit that he took the next morning, which I think is another possible place where the knife could end up being. I know there's actually a search party being put together to look for it now. But yeah, I think there's a lot of possibilities there. The conversation is what would be the most telling. And I really wonder what that was like for the dad and for mom, the sister. I mean, the fact that this family eventually goes out to his car in Pennsylvania and looks into it because they're that curious about, well, could it be him? That says a lot that that family is thinking that's a plausible possibility. I think most parents would be writing that, of course, that's impossible. It can't be my son. They thought it was. They thought it was. So they knew a bit more about Brian than, of course, everyone else did. They're the family. But what is it that they knew? What pieces of his personality made them think, yeah, he could possibly be the guy?
well, issues and issues of raising this kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, what he wrote in his own words and them knowing about that. And this was a kid that struggled in every way, shape, or form with weight, with heroin usage, with being bullied, you know, just having a really tough life. Believe me, I'm not feeling sorry for him. A lot of people have a tough life and they don't massacre other people when they feel like they want to. So I'm just saying, I don't think it was a stretch for them. And then how about the fact you have, you know, him going out and putting biological material in a plastic containers and throwing it away in somebody else's garbage, you know?
Yeah.
There were a lot of indicators.
Wearing gloves and it was not the the typical family get together, and it was not COVID time anymore either. So he can't use the argument, I'm being really careful at wearing gloves, you know, like some people were doing at that point where they're wearing hazmat suits into the Piggly Wiggly. There was other big pieces here too. The first time we got a chance to see the white Elantra in high definition. And I mean, if you watch it frame by frame, you can certainly see it in a lot greater detail, the way that it was presented. The way of driving, the way he was circling in at first, a little calm, the exit is what got me. After the murders, that car leaving, that was a determined drive to get the hell out of there.
Yeah, you pegged it. I mean, we've seen a lot of different footage on social media, but this was confirmed footage from that Ring camera across the way that made it very clear this vehicle. And not only that it came there, but it came there numerous times that morning and then 23 times. Mm-hmm. Now, remember in the affidavit, it was a dozen. Now we're up to 23. Again, not to confuse stalking with surveilling, in my opinion, this was him surveilling that house, understanding where his points of entry and exit would be, learning where the kids might have gone in and out, what their hours were. He was working just like BTK did. That's my opinion.
Yeah, and with that, obviously for a while, Brian Koberger was studying under Dr. Catherine Ramsland, and Howard Bloom had some reporting about that just the other day, and Catherine has responded to that reporting. I know she responded to Brian Enten, and we reported on that the other day. She also responded to us, and I noticed this yesterday, like 4 days after she sent it to me, because I don't check Facebook messages all that often. And here's what she had to say about the Howard Bloom reporting. The reporting basically stating that he believed that Koberger may have been doing this to kind of show off to Catherine. Now, that part is not necessarily being disputed. The part that's being disputed is about Catherine's interaction with Koberger before and after the crimes. I just want to read what she sent to us. I heard your podcast. I have recently made a statement in response to Bloom's allegations because it's not about Koberger, it's about me. I had no email correspondence with Brian Koberger while he was at WSU. He has not been in touch with us, with me, since his arrest. I called his parents as a gesture of kindness, but I do not advise them about the case. I did not call them hours after the arrest, as Bloom claims. I have never talked to his sister about any book. I did not broker anything regarding a lawyer. I have not been invited by the Kobergers to Idaho. I don't know where they'll be staying. I don't know who Bloom's source is or why he reports information for which he has no proof. And Howard has replied as well on his Twitter, kind of walking some of that back to saying it's a hypothesis. But that's Catherine's response to all of that. If we're just going back to the hypothesis, take all of the pieces of the reporting of her communication out of this, because she says she didn't have it. The idea that Koberger might have been doing this, and maybe part of the motive was to still be the smartest person in the room. I don't know. It was a connection of romance, or like, I want to do this for a woman, as we would have seen with like the Reagan attempted assassination. But I think it was more what Howard is saying. It was, you know, look how smart I am too. Catherine, look, I'm just as smart. I did one better. I didn't just interview the killer like she did with BTK. I became the killer. Not that he would say this and she'd go, oh, good job, Brian. Well, I'm so glad you've took everything I said to heart. Not at all. But I think it'd be a quiet thing that he would get, where he would get his, in the words of Karen Reed, ego bath, because other people would be talking and teaching about this perfect killing that they never found the guy for. But they eventually obviously did. What do you think about that element of his reporting?
I'm not really buying it. I think that the rage and anger and everything that built up that would lead you to the point of massacring these kids so far outweighed some sort of, see, I want to show you how great I am. Mm-hmm. I really don't think that that was what was flowing through his brain at the time. Could it have been an ancillary, you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to be as great as BTK and Bundy in his mind in terms of what he accomplished in this murder and what I think could have been preparation for more. I think it could have been an ancillary thought, but to somehow leap to, I'm doing this for my teach.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not buying it. There's just way too much passion and hate and anger in this thing.
It is. I mean, it kind of plays into the whole time I've been saying, I feel like he's incel-y, but I feel like this was more of to have the experience to do this than it was for anything else. So he could go back and so he could bask in the coverage of this thing and really feel something, like he made some sort of difference. That's why I felt like his reporting, his hypothesis, I didn't feel like it was that far off the mark as being a possibility here. I'd love to know where he's getting this, or if it is just that, if it's all just kind of his own hypothesis. His reporting's usually pretty good, and it usually does pan out. But it's interesting now to see the both sides of this from Catherine's point of view and from Howard's. Catherine being called as a witness possibly in this, do you think that that could be a possibility, just considering, she was his teacher? There'd be some observations there on behavior. Not that she was communicating. She's clearly said that she was not. But observations of how he handled the material that was being put out there in relation to what he's alleged to have done. What are your thoughts?
I think the biggest, thing about this, in other words, the biggest thing that gives some credence to what Bloom said in terms of there being some communication between them, even though she's come out and said, no way. Mm-hmm. And she wants to make that very clear.
Yeah.
Why is she being called? Because just how he would have acted in class or communications she might have had with him, that could be interesting to the FBI and could, speak to motive and things possibly. Mm-hmm. But does she know so much more than we think she knows? Mm-hmm. Is that why the government is calling her? Because they've interviewed her and they know there's more.
I don't know. I mean, I do in no way, shape, or form do I think she knew anything about the crime, like he was going to do anything. Behavioral observations of him before the crime while he was a student. You know, did he stand out more than others in terms of interest in specific areas that maybe were kind of odd, that maybe others didn't necessarily naturally gravitate to in terms of interest and passion? We know the questions he put out there and the DeSales project he was doing, it was all very, very much focused on your emotions, how you felt during the crime, how you felt after the crime, all these things seeming to try to learn to identify who or what he should feel while doing something like this. And it's not the first time he's recognized he doesn't have feelings or doesn't have emotions or empathy. And this quest to seemingly find it. I would be so curious to hear her observations of the time of having him as a student.
Yeah, I would be curious. And I think we're going to hear about that because I think she's writing a book. But my question would be, is there more in terms of any correspondence he might have had with her, not that she had with him, mm-hmm. or anything along that line?
Yeah.
And I always wondered if that's where Bloom kind of catapulted this from, seeing her on that witness list, because I'm not sure that just her observations of him all those years ago, mm-hmm. I'm not sure they'd be able to get that in. I guess it depends what she says, but would there be papers? Remember, we saw the paper that I find most interesting on how to conduct a crime scene investigation.
Yeah.
That came out, and mm-hmm. that was so interesting. Did he do any papers for her that, you know, focused in on some area of import here?
Yeah.
I'll be interested to see how it plays out and if she's even called.
Yeah, I would be very much too. But that was her response to that, so we know where she stands. The search history, another thing that we learned about, which we've all been wondering and kind of thinking, oh, this will be good. It is. It's good. It's, I mean, not good in a good way, but it's has a lot of in it that doesn't, that seems to play along with the Koberger mindset, allegedly. Drugged, passed out, Ted Bundy, those are just some of the things, and intermingled with porn. One could say, is this weird? He's a 20-something college guy, and he's looking up weird porn. I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends what you're into. That's pretty sick stuff, and certainly does go along with, you know, this whole thing. Obviously, there wasn't an SA that took place in the house with the murders, but clearly this did seem to target someone that there seemed to be some sort of sexual attraction to, or that whole incel type thinking with the people that he targeted. Do you think that that has any legs to it?
Oh, I think it has legs. Of course, the defense will easily be able to divert that search history saying, mm-hmm. listen, he was getting a PhD in criminology. And I got to tell you, Tony, I think if anyone looked at your phone and my phone, what in the hell?
Yeah.
Because of everything we search yeah. and look at in preparation for our shows
yeah.
And so on. So, but this is the difference. We're not on trial for massacring four people.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of taking the totality of everything that has happened and then looking at his search history, it really puts a view on it that, geez, he was looking at porn with somebody that was passed out, drugged or mm-hmm. otherwise unconscious, and who did he choose to attack?
Yeah.
Exactly that. And I think a jury will be able to easily make that roadmap stick.
It's a weird, I don't want to like dive into it too much, but do you think the intent was to take this to an essay when he was there and it all fell apart because he wasn't expecting all the people there?
1,000%. Yeah. This was 1,000%, in my opinion, all about gratification.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think Kaylee being in bed with her completely ruined all of his plans in that area. Thank God.
Yeah.
I mean, thank God and then not thank God, right? Because mm-hmm. of poor Kaylee. But I just mean, yeah, it changed and diverted his plan, I think.
Yeah. 23 times pinging near that house before the killings. Do you think he planned it for that night? Do you think it was, okay, tonight's the night, I'm going to get there and this is going down? Or do you think it could have been one of any of the many, many times he circled that house and this just happened to have been the night that he got his courage up to go in and do what he allegedly did?
I think he had planned this and thought about this for so long, at least 8 months, right? That yeah. was when the K-Bar was originally purchased. And I think he's thought about it well before that. Mm-hmm. And finally, Tony, he had the courage. Finally, that impulse control took off and he was able to get the courage to go in and do this. But I think he was obviously very well prepared. Look at how he was dressed. He was mm-hmm. able to somehow defrock all of that clothing. You know, this was very well planned. And but for Zanna being up on her phone, yeah. TikTok, I believe it was, Instagramming,
yeah.
and coming up those steps and her really derailing his plans mm-hmm. To make his escape, you know, maybe he wouldn't have dropped that knife sheath, right? Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't seem like genius planning in terms of knowing who's in the house and what you're walking into. It seems like he really rolled the dice there. Like, maybe there'll be people here, maybe they won't. I don't know if he's had blinders on thinking there can't be anybody else in this house. I don't know why you would think that, but I don't know. Maybe it just had to be a roll of the dice because you really didn't know who or what was in that house at any given time with the amount of people. And his impulse just took over.
he knew. I mean, there was a DoorDash delivery that he saw. He waited for that guy to leave. He knew somebody was up. I think this is part of the excitement of being able to control that situation, being smarter than everybody. And it really is just like Bundy's situation, which he had searched and knew about at the Chi Omega house.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, thinking no matter what, who was awake, what the obstacle was, he was going to conquer that situation. And I think it was exciting for him.
It's messed up when you, especially when you put everything together, the phone calls, the picture after, and everything that we know. And this is only, we only know a fraction. There's so much more, I think, that'll be coming out in court because so much has been under seal. And who knows? August, it's not far away, but it's far away. And there's a lot that I'm guessing will be dropping between now and then. Wondering still if he's going to plead out if the cards get too tough against him. Do you think anything would put him over that line to try and do that?
No way.
No.
He's eaten this up. He's not going to plea. He knows that even if he does get a death sentence 20 years from now, when it's the time, who knows what will happen?
Yeah.
I mean, look at Hansen.
Yeah.
Look at all of that, you know, band of murdering, you know, heathens. They were sentenced to death, and then their sentences were all commuted. And so he knows how long this process takes, and I think he's going to stick with it.
Joining us is Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, to help us separate the calculated from the compulsive and the creepy from the clinically relevant. Siobhan, based on what Dateline has revealed, and we have some clips we'll watch here in just a few moments, Koberger searches about how to go about life here. His fascination with serial killers like Bundy, his repeated trips near the victim's house, how much of this looks very much like premeditation versus some sort of impulsive obsession, and what can those behaviors tell us about his underlying psychology? There's a lot there.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I was waiting to hear was what kind of porn is this guy into? Because it carries tremendous significance when you're dealing with people, you know, who have sex accusations of sex offenses. You want to get into their internet history. And so what I heard is that he was looking for porn related to women who were drugged, sleeping, unconscious. And that, you know, that's kind of a red flag.
It's obviously a genre out there for some rather disturbed individuals, but it's out there. And the fact that he's looking at it, and he has pictures of women on his phone. The defense is going to argue, look, he was a 20-some-year-old guy. Yeah, he's into some kind of weird porn, but it doesn't make him a killer. There's plenty of guys who are watching porn, and there's plenty of guys who have pictures of busty young women on their phone. That'll be the simple defense. But when all put into context, does it tell us a different story?
Yeah, it sure does for me. And the pictures on his phone, you know, big difference if this was, you know, a girlfriend or someone that was consenting to having their photo taken. Mm-hmm. But if he was sneakily snapping photos of people, and that was the sense I got, these were not people who he knew that, you know, were willing to pose for photos for him. That's another red flag that makes me concerned, is people who are sneaking photos of other people.
Yeah, and I don't know how much it was him sneaking the photos as much as it was going onto other people's Instagram accounts and such, and just
taking the photos,
which in itself is a bit of a weird thing to do.
I prefer not to see people getting photos that way. There are enough legitimate ways you can look at photos of attractive women. Yeah. I mean, online, people who have posted things there, but going into other people's personal stuff and taking their photos is, to me, that's something that disturbs me. I would want to look at that person more closely.
Yeah, without a doubt. And that's the thing. And we've learned that some of the photos are Dateline has reported, and has learned that some of the photos are of fairly close friends of people that were in that house. We don't know all the details yet. I'm sure it will come out in court. But the fact that the web goes that far. We don't know if there was anything with the actual victims there, but I mean, what does that tell us about what's going on here? Was this kind of, is he working? I mean, allegedly, you know, he's innocent until proven guilty. But if, in fact, it is him, is this someone who's kind of working their way backwards to get forward to where or to the people they want to get to by going through friends and kind of working it that way?
Yeah, it speaks to me of somebody who had a fixation, who was cyberstalking, who was apparently, according to the data about the car being in the vicinity, was physically stalking. And all those things paint a picture that, as the DNA has led back to him, that confirmed that.
Another thing that was going on, and obviously we've heard about it too with the searches, and it's part of the search history, looking up a lot of Ted Bundy. Yes, obviously he is a criminology student, so I guess not that extremely crazy of a possibility, but when you consider the striking similarities, although Ted Bundy had a charisma about him, Koberger does not at all.
Maybe he was aspiring. He wanted a little bit of Bundy's charisma and didn't have it.
Yeah, it's like Bundy without charisma is basically what it is. But probably someone that Koberger might have looked up to. I mean, that's just speculation. But especially when you put it all into context with that picture at the end of the day, and that's the one we've talked about so many times, the one in the shower with the thumbs up. That seemed to be... amongst other nods to Bundy as well, with Bundy's thumbs up photo. What do you make of all that? Is this something? Is it show us anything? Does it give it any weight in court that he was looking up Ted Bundy prior to the murders taking place?
Yeah, in and of itself, it wouldn't necessarily mean anything. A lot of people are curious about Ted Bundy, all the movies that have been made about him, books written about him. You know, it's sort of like... something freakish that people want to understand. But I think, again, it's everything in context here, and taking photos of himself, selfies of himself in the same manner as to look like Bundy. Again, it just puts a layer of creepiness on all of it that, you know, it's another piece of the whole picture that I think does carry weight.
It's quite an extreme thing just to jump in and go, I'm going to kill four people or kill anyone in general. Just to go from zero to that, I'm going to guess there was some buildup here and there may have been some fantasizing going on. There may have been some, I don't know, test runs in a certain way. Maybe that's part of the car circling the house all those times. But even deeper than that, Dateline reported on a very interesting piece of behavior, and that is that of Koberger helping out a fellow teacher, a fellow teaching assistant, who he became kind of friends with, a female that also was in the same apartment complex as he shared. The story goes that she came into her apartment one day and her cosmetics were lined out on the counter where she did not normally put them. Nothing was taken. It was just very odd to see that because nobody should have been coming in and out of the house. She gets scared. She reaches out. She tells her friend Brian, who she sees every day, and then he becomes the hero. He comes in, helps her set up a security camera, has access to the Wi-Fi password, has access to the security camera password. And she looks back on this going, oh, God, was he studying me? Was he following me? Let's talk about that for a little bit. Obviously, she was not one of his victims in the sense of murder, but a victim in another way. What do you think is going on there? What is going on in someone like Koberger's mind that he's going to carry out behaviors like that?
Yeah, that's a really chilling one. And, you know, guys who go on to become serial killers often start with stalking, with voyeurism, and with breaking into women's homes. Sometimes they steal an undergarment or something that they think won't be missed. And so when I heard about her cosmetics being lined up in a particular way, my brain took me to also, well, he has OCD tendencies, which are pretty well documented at this point. And did he just think her bathroom was too messy and he felt this urge to have to straighten everything up for her, you know, which may be absurd and it may be true, who knows? Yeah. But, you know, clearly for her then to turn to him for help, wow, what an opportunity for him to gather more information and video possibly of her. So pretty scary.
As non-socially skilled as he is, he seemed to be skilled a bit in just kind of the mechanics of life. Because when you just look at the cause and effect of this, most people aren't going to think if this happened to them, that their cosmetics are lined up weirdly on their counter, that the person you're asking is the one who actually did it. That's just not something that would normally go through one's mind. But it's a real simple thing to do. I mean, you really just look at the mechanics of it. If you want to be the hero in somebody's life, well, instill a little bit of fear. And then be the person that's going to help take those fears away. That seems to be exactly what he did. Mm-hmm. And that's yeah. I mean, it doesn't necessarily then play into the murders, though, either. Is that more just like a control move? Is it a confirmation move of, look, I can get away with this? And it just kind of a step up to more and more extreme behavior?
Yeah, and getting away with things is exciting. It's sort of like the prelude to the big thing, which is going to be the killings. But there may have been some things that she never missed, that who knows how many times he had actually been in her apartment and what things he may have taken that were missed. And we don't know how many times might he have done this to other people, these kind of low-level burglary, stalking, voyeuristic kinds of things. My guess would be that he had been doing this sort of thing for years.
Is this sort of,
and just never gotten caught.
Is something like this, is that compulsive? Or, I mean, is that calculated? And when I say compulsive, meaning like he has little control over to whether he's going to do it or not. It's the thought gets into his head and it's just this urge that he can't quench. Is that the kind of thinking that some of these people have?
I'd say it's like addiction, you know, where somebody ruminates about something, they fantasize about something, they sexualize it. So they're masturbating while they're thinking about it and fantasizing. And the idea of going into someone's personal space, they get a sense of power, you know, that they can sneak around and do these sort of things. And so, you know, it's a good question. At what point do people have control over their addictions? And when do they not have any control? I tend to lean on the side of they've got control, but it may feel very much like a compulsive urge. But, you know, I have a compulsive urge to eat ice cream. I mean, that's as severe as I get, right?
Yeah.
But I just don't keep it in the house. I can manage that urge because it's in my best interest to not be sitting there eating ice cream all the time.
Yeah. I mean, every time, you know, when I see you, when we first log on to this, you always have to put the ice cream bowl down. And I know there's a lot
it's
of times
hard.
You're like, you're
it's
trying
hard.
To sneak it between, between questions. But, you know, I get it. So Brian Koberger's attorneys just hit pause and basically told the court, hey, we're getting a little more time. We got to look at the menu a little bit more. We got to find out more about his childhood, about all the issues that he may have had, about everything. So when it comes time to kill him, maybe you guys think twice. Seems to be kind of what's going on here. It is a... it's a high-profile murder trial. You got to make sure the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted because you don't want to dot the T's and cross the I's. That gets a little weird.
It's problematic.
Yeah, it causes issues. So why is this going on? Because a recent NBC Dateline episode, they say, blew a hole in any chance of their client getting a fair trial. Now, I mean, come on, let's be real here. Dateline does episodes on all sorts of cases. Koberger and Ann Taylor seem to be looking for anything they possibly can put their hands on to go and say, oh, technicality, this isn't fair, somebody said this a lot, but yeah. While at the end of the day, his DNA's on the knife sheet, he has a shopping history of buying the weapon, he's taken a bunch of creepy photos of himself, his car's pinging right there, they know he did it.
They have to know.
At this point, you got to be saying, okay, well, we got to try and save his life. I think that's really what we're up to right now. So they are asking in a new court filing, they're asking that this special, aired nationwide, served up a batch of details that weren't even public yet. like footage showing a car that looks suspiciously like Koberger's cruising around near the King Road house where the four University of Idaho students were murdered. That footage, along with other tidbits, wasn't supposed to be out there, but now it's primetime entertainment. They're basically saying because this is out there now, now it's impossible for him to get a fair jury trial. I got news for you. Not everybody follows true crime. In fact, no. A lot of people don't. Because I get asked what I do all the freaking time. And there's some that light up with excitement because they know exactly what I'm talking about. And there's some that are like, huh? What? I don't know about that one. So I'm sure you could easily find a group of, huh? I don't know about that one in a jury. Yep. It's not going to be impossible, Anne, and you know that, and I know that, and everybody knows that. And, well, I don't know if Brian does, because Brian, you know, seems to be a bit of a sociopath, but you're going to find a jury. But it is a murder case.
You know, I see the point about now some of the evidence that's out there. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, that Dateline episode was stunningly startling. Mm-hmm. You know, if anybody saw it and ends up in a jury questionnaire, yeah, it's going to be troubling and they're probably disqualified. Sure. Because they've suddenly seen some really damning evidence against this man.
You got this thing going on in Boise, though. There's a lot of people there.
Yeah.
You're going to find enough that aren't. I mean, I can see the argument back if it was still in Moscow, Idaho.
Get sure. That. Those people were directly affected by this murder because they knew somebody that lived near there. They knew somebody who knew the victims. They drove by the area it happened by. I mean, whatever the reasoning is, now that it's not in that city, you're going to find people who have no idea that this was even going on. And you're going to go, how did you not know about it? Well, there are people who don't know, because I ran into somebody 2 weeks ago that thought that Joe Biden was still president, didn't realize we had an election. I shit you not. Didn't realize that we had already had that election and there's a new president.
What's wrong with that person?
They kind of did this. Well, I'm not on social media. Okay. I can get that. I have a flip phone and I don't watch a lot of TV.
Well, they might as well be Ted Kaczynski in the woods. Even he was more informed.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, like, when you walk into the office, and this person does work for a corporation, into the office, they had to have picked up on a vibe either from the people who are Democrats or,
I don't believe it. I don't believe that. I don't believe that they, I think they were giving you a line of BS.
I don't know.
You got to tell me more off the air, but okay.
People who live under this umbrella I'm not in touch with the outside world
at all. I mean, that'd be quite an umbrella to live under, just to not even know those basics. But maybe maybe there are that dumb of people out there. I mean, I get not wanting to be participating in it, but I mean, you got to know at least, you know, the sun comes up in the morning and it goes down at night, and just the basics of what's going on in your civilization around you. That'd be a healthy thing.
And what's interesting is she has disconnected from the world. And the only reason that I really even was in touch with her is an email. So I know that she's got a computer, and we were just talking back and forth about some cat stuff. She really is disconnected. Now,
she's going to marry the cats. This is going to be one of those stories where there's cat love going on, and it's not just like, these are my pets.
I got to tell you, Tony, there was a little twinge of envy in my voice when I'm like, really? You are that disconnected from mainstream anything? What a glorious place to be for a few minutes. You know?
I would go nuts.
Well, yeah, for a few minutes, it'd be great. I think it would make me batshit crazy.
There's something wrong with you.
I want to go to the cabin and disconnect from everything.
That's an unhealthy disconnection. That's like a cognitive dissonance that's really not healthy to know. I mean, don't have to be into it, but you should know the basics of what's going on around you.
Well, and then when I explain what I do for a living, and you can get the app on your phone, and she was just like,
Well, hey, it's okay if that's what they like to live, as long as they're not harming anybody. Probably not the healthiest of human beings, but if they're not harming anybody or themselves, or the cats, aren't harming them.
Yep.
Although I'd say you probably have fairly high odds that the cats are going to eat her alive at some point.
Alive? Hell, they're waiting for her to
she's
just
dead.
Die.
Like, I'm guessing there's nobody else in her house, just a wild guess?
Correct.
Oh! Shocker there. So I'm going to guess she'll die, then the cats are going to eat her. That's how this will all end?
Okay. And we won't find out until somebody, 3 months after her death says, we need to do a welfare check
on the cats.
Yeah.
There'll be a welfare check on the cats before there'll be one on her.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Koberger, if you've somehow missed the case, is the former criminal justice PhD student accused of stabbing four students. Ethan Chapin, Zana Kernodle, Madison Mogan, and Kaylee Gonsalves in their off-campus house back in November of 2022. He's pled not guilty. Prosecutors want the death penalty if he's convicted. So, the stakes are a little bit high here. And now his legal team is saying that going to trial in August of 2025 as originally planned would be flat-out unfair, beyond just Dateline. Between the leaked evidence and all this pre-trial publicity, they say the jury pool isn't just tainted. It's basically been marinated in media coverage. That'd be a neat flavor of marinara sauce.
Ew.
You like to see the Rao's or the Prego? Okay, let me ask you. As a pasta sauce... do you buy pasta sauce in a can?
I do.
Or a jar?
I don't eat a lot of pasta these days, but I've got a favorite.
I like to make my own, but I do have some go-tos when I don't have any of that. What is your go-to?
Classico spicy red pepper.
Ooh, that sounds good.
So it's kind of in the squarish bottle.
I haven't tried that.
And spicy red pepper is not findable in all places. They have every other flavor.
I can't say I've seen it, honestly.
It's really good.
Spicy.
It's got a little bit of a kick to it.
Nice.
Yeah.
And what about childhood? Did you have a specific one that your mother would get or anything like that? Or
I think Ragu was the only one because I'm old.
What about Prego? There was Prego.
Prego came out probably, I want to say maybe in the 80s.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And you're
like
a little
just
bit
the basic.
Yeah. We would do
not
the Prego.
Not the veggie one.
We would do the Prego and the green one. I don't know what the green one is, but the Prego green one is like a taste of childhood. And it turns out it's a lot of corn syrup.
right? High fructose corn syrup.
Yeah. I think today I get the, I get the Rao's. I like the, Harper likes the vodka sauce one. She does shots of pasta sauce before we have dinner together. It's kind of
throw in some cream cheese.
Yeah,
in it.
Yes, exactly. It's very good. Anyway,
baby,
I don't know how we go. Oh, media marinara, the way it was phrased.
Media marinara would just taste salty.
And by the way, since we're not doing Karen Reed today, here's a salute to you, Karen. It's a vodka tonic in an A&W glass. There you go.
I don't think she'd go to an A&W, but. Do you think half the country listening knows what that is?
Oh, yeah.
Abe and Willie's?
It's all over. Yeah.
Okay.
But wait, there's more.
Mm-hmm.
The defense also flagged an upcoming book about the case that, according to its own promo blurb, might include even more leaked info, which means, according to Koberger's attorneys, this Dateline leak wasn't a one-time oopsie. It started to look more like a pattern. And the filling reads like a laundry list of legal headlines, or the filing does. Incomplete investigation, still missing discovery material, a growing concern that this case is being tried in the court of public opinion before it ever hits a real courtroom. Well, guess what? You're going to have to deal with that one, because that's not going away. So everybody having all these issues with media coverage and this and that, sorry, that's how the world works now. So stop bitching about it and find better ways to deal with it. Because it's not going to stop. That's just what it is. That's the environment that we live in today. Now, as far as the whole you need more time, you have had all the information now for, we're going close to 3 years at this point. Have you been spending too much time stargazing with Brian late at night, you know, out there in the rural areas? Cloudy. In a cloudy night where you can't see anything? Or are you just really, really trying to reach here? Because it feels a lot more like a reach than an actual legal argument. Judge Hippler, who's overseeing the case, recently asked both sides to turn over names. He's not taking this stuff lying down. Names of anyone who had access to the leaked material. And so far, no one's been publicly blamed, but it is clear the judge wants to know who's whispering secrets behind the scenes. At the heart of it, the defense is saying that this trial goes forward under these conditions. Any conviction will be built on shaky ground, shaky enough to overturn the conviction, is what the prosecution or the defense is, you know. They're saying a lot of stuff. That's what they're saying. And in the interest of everybody, you don't want any sort of possible ways where this is going to be overturned, you know, on an appeal. But you can't really control that information came out there. It's strong for the case. It's not going away. People are going to keep finding more things out. You were lucky enough. You got the gag order that you did at the beginning that you did. So what else you got? You're not going to find much more in whatever data you haven't gone through yet. I know you need to find your experts and stuff to argue if he's, you know, fit for being executed. But at the end of the day, I mean, he got up, he worked, he was a PhD student, killed four people likely. I really, frankly, don't give a flying F what happened to him in childhood. Sucks. Horrible. Yes. Not grounds to let you live the rest of your life alive and breathing the same air as us. It's not. And I don't know that there really was anything that happened to him in childhood. He just kind of seems to be the broken brain type.
Yeah.
Nobody feels
that way.
Nobody wants to spend years on a case just to hit replay because things weren't done right the first time. And that's true, because if they... And this is where Hippler has to be careful. Yes, she can scream, oh, it's going to be, you know, overturned on appeal, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, okay, just like he likes to go stargaze too. But you really got to make sure that there's not any chance of that, or that we're going to get a retrial because of some sort of argument that is legitimate on the front end of this. And then the whole family and everybody has to go through this again, basically for the next 10 to 15 years, because that's what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be another 4 or 5 years of getting this case ready and finally go to trial. And you hope that it's ready then. I mean, the longer he has, the more they're going to try and find reasons. They're going for technicalities, and the clock is running out, and they don't have a technicality. And that's what they're going at now. Dateline has there's no allegiance to anything. They can publish whatever the hell they want, whatever they get their hands on.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not breaking a gag order or anything like that. Now, how they got the information, who knows? I don't know the answer to that. And yeah, I mean, ideally, you don't want people leaking things, but people leak things. It's always happened. It always will. Does not take away from the guilt or innocence of a potential suspect in a case or someone who's being charged with that crime. So, yeah. I don't know how much I buy the we need more time thing. I feel like, I don't know. I feel like she's done a lot of crying wolf.
Yeah.
And now we're at the point where, yeah, whatever, Anne. I mean, you did your job, but now it's just kind of getting redundant. Third-party culprit, that's what they're going to be supposedly bringing to the table here in the coming days to the judge. It's all under seal. But they're going to have to be specific. They can't just be saying something to the effect of, well, we think it was another masked man that did it with bushy eyebrows. No.
That was circling the house and checking it out. And yeah.
Somehow his phone is pinging there. I mean, they don't have it. And just because someone says they have it doesn't mean they do.
Yep.
So that's the latest on the Koberger case. We'll find out in the coming days what the judge is going to decide, because we thought that this last hearing was going to be the last one before the trial. Oh, no. As in everything in this case, it just keeps getting a little more crazier and a little more deep. They want more time. We knew this would probably happen at some point. The defense saying, you know, that trial that's supposed to start here in like 2 months and we've been getting ready for it for roughly 3 years. Yeah, that wasn't enough time. We got to look more into the background of Koberger. We have to learn more about what made him who he is today. It really feels like they're, you know, I think they're on let's prevent him from being killed mode at this point. Joining me to discuss, Robin Drieg, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Is that what you're gleaning out of this, with the defense saying we need more time? Because a lot of the needing more time seems to focus not so much on his innocence, but explaining him so a bullet doesn't go towards his chest.
I think I've been trying to do that for a year now.
Yeah.
It's all they have. It's at a certain point, you know, you give defense a lot of credit for the effort, but at a certain point, there's only so much extra credit you can turn in to try to sway the teachers to your side. And I think she's done. I mean, and it just looks to desperation at this point, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, it is a capital case, so they do tend to take longer, and they really got to make sure those T's are crossed and those I's are dotted, and it's not the other way around where you have a T dotted and an I crossed, because that ends up being grounds for an appeal.
It's going to get appealed no matter what.
It's going to get appealed no matter what, but the grounds are the point, you know?
Right.
Like, what are the grounds you're building this idea on? Which is essentially what they're doing right now. Whether or not they expect it to be granted this stay in the trial, they got it on record. So after he's convicted, they can go back and say, see, look at the record. We needed to have these things, and they didn't give it to us. So this is, now, that to be granted, you know, really depends on the case in chief itself, and if a judge is going to say, yeah, it really wasn't fair, or the judge is going to say, yeah, nice try, have a nice day. But I with something like this, should we grant them a little more time just to be on the safe side? Because you don't want to end up going through this for the next 5 to 15 years should he be found guilty, and then it just goes appeal. Maybe something gets granted, then they got to go through all of it again. You have to have the family go through all the hell again, too. She's throwing a lot of stuff at the wall. This is another strand of spaghetti. Is this one we should look at, or the state should look at and say, yeah, we'll give you a little more time? I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I don't know what they would find. Again, yeah. I'm not the lawyer. I'm not the judge. I like what the judge has been doing to give them plenty of time. I mean, I think the judge has done a really good job to do all he can to mitigate, like you said, laying that foundation for the appeal so there's nothing there when they actually do. At the same time, though, in order to reasonably give them more time, they'd have to be more specific about for what.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you actually had a psychiatrist or a criminal psychologist come in and say, well, we actually have this thing we're looking at specifically that we want to test him for, we want to evaluate for, so we can bring more experts to testify on, that would make sense. But right now they want more time to do a fishing expedition.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you get more time for fishing. I think it would have to be more specific than that.
It seems like that's all Ann Taylor's been trying to do is fish on this one. That's got to be a 100%. Difficult job for her to, because at some point, like, look, there's no fish left in this little pond you got here. It doesn't matter that Brian is sitting there going, look, a koi, look, a perch. And there's like, no, there's nothing in the water, Brian. There really is nothing there. You got to kind of bring him to reality. But I don't know that he's capable of that. His attorneys are arguing that they can't select the right experts without finishing their profiling and trauma investigation. So expert witnesses You know, I don't want to say they're a dime a dozen, but, you know, there's all different types of expert witnesses out there. There's some that are really good and there's some that are not so great. And you pay them to help testify for you on different areas of whatever your case may be. And this one, I guess it would be to the mind of Brian Koberger of how he couldn't have possibly done this. I'm wondering if they're really running into the issue of they can't find an expert witness, period, that will go onto this case and somehow stand up for Brian, because they're going to have their own data that they're coming in saying, here's how this works. And if that doesn't go in line with what their story is, that's not going to help Brian. I don't know if they're finding anybody is what I'm wondering.
Well, I don't think there's anyone to find, because I think they're trying to do one of two things. Again, I don't know what they're actually doing, but I would think that they're either trying to find someone to say, because of his background, his behavior arc, he's incapable of this behaviorally, or they're trying to mitigate it, saying he did this because of all these things. So it's not, he's not responsible for the actions because of this, to try to lessen the impact, so he doesn't get the death penalty. In either case, both would require, I think, a whole new psychological profile and evaluation that just doesn't exist. And so I think they're having a hard time finding an expert, because they're trying to find an expert to give him a diagnosis that is non-existent. They want to find, they're trying to create something that's just not there, just kind of like the autism attempt they made. You know, after she mentioned it, we did all the research we could to find cases of that being used in cases like this, and it doesn't exist. And so that kind of fell flat. So I really think there's a lot of invention attempts going on here. She's trying to psychologically innovate her way to keep him alive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a challenge to do, is because this industry of of psychology has been around a long time. The DSM is very, very encompassing of all the different psychological effects and psychiatric effects on people. And there's nothing that she can grab onto, or an expert can grab onto, because all the experts are saying, oh yeah, it doesn't fit.
There's nothing to grab onto that works in their favor.
No.
I mean, there's a lot to grab onto, but it all points to Brian being the guy who did this. And that's the interesting part of all this. And I found it fascinating where they go down this road of, well, he couldn't have possibly done this. And they've argued everything now, from autism to some sort of physical disorder that he couldn't have possibly. He doesn't have the, like, it's one thing after another. Was it a wise idea? I mean, to go down the road of he's mentally inept or incapable of doing this sort of thing, or he's totally capable of doing this thing because this is how he thinks. I don't feel either is a win for him, because in a lot of ways you go down the mental angle of this, and that's really, you know, what drives him. There's some sort of mental problem going on. And it all kind of just goes to the same place, where you look at a person with the profile that we understand of Koberger, and it makes you understand him more, but you understand him to very likely be the type of human being who would be capable of doing this sort of thing. It's not the other way around. It's not like, oh, he's this autistic child who sits in the corner and rocks. No, it's not. It's not helping their case.
No, it's I keep thinking every time she floats an idea out here to do one of these things as a defense, I just keep thinking of politicians. Every time a politician is trying to win an election, they kind of float a new thing out there, kind of see what the public response is. And then if it grabs, and they're going down that road. If it doesn't grab, then they distance themselves from it, move on to the next. I just keep imagining she keeps floating these different theories out there to see if anyone grabs onto it. And nothing works, because it's all bunk.
Yeah, it very much appears to be. They also have issue with Dateline. Dateline exposed too much. And I know the judge is not happy about this. He's doing his own investigation, digging deep into everybody's cell phones, who said what, where did this leak come from? I don't blame him. That's an important thing to do. But there's always going to be leaks. It just is kind of what happens. They're saying because this information is now out there in the ether, and everyone has watched Dateline, although not everybody watches Dateline and not everybody follows this case. I find far more people, when I'm talking to folks out there, you like, what do you do? And what cases are you following, where you bring it up and you think people are going to know about it? No, I think maybe 2 in 10 maybe know about this. If that's maybe 1 in 10 at least that have any sort of deep knowledge on the case. I think that's even smaller. But they're saying that this has tainted the jury pool so much. Again, it's their argument from the defense. She's doing her job. But is there any legitimacy to this where, well, these pieces of evidence should be thrown out because the jury's too tainted? Or, again, just another piece of spaghetti, but maybe this time it's a piece of penne, which really doesn't stick to the wall.
So I think the judge is doing a great job by investigating so he can deal with that action. But because, it, again, it goes to any sort of appeal and things like that. But if he didn't throw out their motion to get rid of DNA, he's not going to get rid of this. Yeah. So I think we're solid. I think we're solid on all the on everything Dateline had. I don't think anything's going to get thrown out. The judge seems very reasonable. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, is it going to taint the jury pool? Eh, maybe. But one of the reasons why I think you know prosecution is so silent on many things is because they're solid on what they got. Yeah. You know, she keeps – so if you, we deal with this a lot with the cases, and even the Karen Reed case. Mm-hmm. You know, when you lack substantive, tangible forensic evidence, like data, which is objective, you the only thing you have left is subjective. And so I think the prosecution's got lots of objective data and evidence, and so defense can't counter it, as we're seeing from these stabs in the dark by subjective opinions. And so I think that's what she's trying to do, is trying to cause reasonable doubt by subjective opinions and ideas to counter everything that's going to be coming at her.
Yeah. Third party culprit. That's the new argument.
Sorry to keep laughing.
I want to put together a list of everything they've argued so far, because
that'd be a good list.
I think I'm going to do that. That would be a good list of everything that's been argued.
Stargazing alibi is probably my favorite, though.
Yeah. Which one?
The stargazing.
Stargazing. Yes. So yes, that
on a cloudy night. Never done it before.
On a cloudy night, he likes to go look at the stars, and he just happened to be doing that at that exact time.
Right.
So now somebody else did it, according to them. They can't just say it and then it's going to be let in. They're going to have to produce something, right. And it's all under seal. The judge is going to take a look at it and go, okay, you got a case here, you got an argument, or you don't. Where on earth do you think they're going with this?
Other DNA in the house, probably. That's the only thing I can probably think of, is that house is so riddled with fluids from other people, I'm guessing, over the years.
Yeah.
That they're able to find someone or something to try to pin it on. That's the only thing I can come up with.
I feel bad for any human being who they're going to start going after.
So again, just a thought experiment. This was a college house, mm-hmm. which had lots of tenants in and out of there over the years. Lots of people in parties over the years. I mean, I don't know how many deep cleanings the place has had, but I don't think it probably had a lot prior to the evidence teams going. It's one of the reasons why they had such a hard time with collecting DNA or any evidence in this case, is because it's a college house.
Yeah.
So it's going to have lots of
everything.
DNA all over the place. Yeah. And so, I mean, I can only imagine, again, who knows, you know, this is my small child brain just thinking that I think they're just trying to find anything in that house they could pin it to. And they probably found lots of DNA to try to pin it to, but who knows what'll stick.
Yeah. I mean, and they'd have to go on their own investigation, find these people, and then drag mm-hmm. their names through the mud and then get sued at the end of the day.
I still think what they're trying to do, again, if I was this person, I wouldn't try to drag anyone else through the mud, because that's someone else you can cross-examine and they get eliminated from the potentiality. I think, you know, so the only thing that pops in my mind is like Richard Allen. Mm-hmm. Richard Allen, Delphi case. So you have other people that were around those girls that actually had done heinous crimes against children, who mm-hmm. actually were in jail before and actually then died, you know, and they're no longer around. Mm-hmm. And so I would think that what she might be trying to do is find the DNA of someone who's no longer living on this planet, who actually had a record, and try to pin it on them. I don't know if you can.
I don't know if you can.
Right.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.